Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! No, the drum loop doesn't just go on and on and on forever without me talking. I'm here. It's me.
Bob.
Yep. Howdy. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. That means it must be Thursday, the 22nd day of September, 2016. Yes, indeed. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that is where you go. If you would like to jump into them, and assuming, of course, that you've got a computer that tolerates Java and all of that, that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the rousing multimedia madcap real-time extravaganza, merry, zany, and all that, that happens between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time every evening when the program is live. Absolutely. If you do that, and if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will promptly be met and welcomed by Anatole, Jug of Punch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is basking, nay, dare I say it, reveling in 77-degree temperatures in Northern California, where he, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Yes. As noted, you know, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We've gotten that out of the way, right? Good. And, let me start out by saying, because I have not been able to say this for a very long time, we're caught up. Yay. Thank you. Hallelujah. Glory. I'm so very happy to make that announcement. I really, really am. And we are caught up courtesy of Peg and Robert in Australia and Labor Man and Gary and our subscribers, which is awesome. We can always use more subscribers, by the way. Thank you all very, very kindly. So that means all we've got is our regular evenings, ordinary, typical, boring $200 to raise this evening. You know, what we try to raise every evening in order to keep everything rolling merrily along. So one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25. 16 at $12.50, 32 at $6.13. I got lost already. So that's how we do that. Thank you very kindly, one and all. Unfortunately, there's a second. Almost all of the crummy Frontier internet is back up, but we are still down. We're still down one connection. And that was another 2 hours of my life on the phone with the meaningless tech support call that you can't get around having to make before they'll issue a trouble ticket. So I figure it'll probably only be a couple more hours of my life before we get that connection sorted out. Unfortunately, it's the most solid connection we have, so I'm just hoping, against hope, that we don't have any buffering issues or any of that stuff this evening, but sadly there is no guarantee. It would be nice if there was, but, you know, there isn't. So here we are on this 22nd day of September. I'm sure you're well aware of what happened overnight in Charlotte. And I wish I could say that we had some sort of a solution to this problem. There are solutions to this problem, but the United States thus far, nor any of it, or nor a majority of its several states, have seen fit to try to pursue them. We try to instead talk around them. Unwilling as we are to acknowledge that the same curse that has bedeviled us since we were before a nation continues to this day. I sometimes wonder I don't like the idea that it might be true, because one, it violates my principles of living in the real world and not believing in the supernatural, and two, because if what I'm about to say is true, then we're just, you know, sort of screwed forever. But I wonder if we're cursed. I wonder if taking this entire continent, or the biggest part of it, not discounting Canada at all, some of the same issues did, however, occur there. But I wonder if taking the biggest part of this continent by force and soaking the land in blood such as it had never been soaked before, I wonder if that, you know, sort of doomed us from the start. And then adding on top of that the barbarous and heinous practice of slavery, from which no matter how much precious, darling little 2016 Miss White Privilege Tommy Lauren opines and squeals against it, remains our foundational problem, and a problem that dogs us to this day. Because places like Charlotte and places like Tulsa damned sure make it seem that way. I watched the press conference this morning at which Charlotte Chief of Police Putney gave his take, his opinion on things. And what he said struck me sort of sideways. I hear by virtue primarily of the fact that I have been educated by Dr. Bill O'Brien over the course of 13 years now. I hear echoes of things and things that get said in the modern era that maybe a lot of people don't. I had a lovely note earlier today from Peggy, who is out in the sandbox, who noted that your and Dr. Bill's podcasts are the best. I've learned from the both of you. If I had Dr. Bill as a professor, I would have gone into history rather than science. I hope he's rewarded with a win in the West Virginia legislature. Your multiple interests in ancient and modern history, politics, environment have kept me so very well informed, and listening to both of your podcasts have been a lifesaver while roaming around the sandbox. I buy all the books Dr. Bill has recommended on Constitution, reading the Federalist Papers, which at my age I should have known about many decades ago. I download ancient history books, and I'm hooked. I particularly like the pre-Babylonian era. I know that most of what I read are based on tiny fragments of cuneiform seals, which have been painstakingly put together by archaeologists, and that much may be educated guesswork, but I believe everything I read on it. Lastly, your comments about lyrics of songs struck a note with me. Lyrics now available when a favorite song comes on and on the Amazon app. I think Fleetwood Mac's Gold Dust Woman may very well be about the pre-Babylonian queens of some of those nasty kings. Tonight is our start of the weekend. Yeah, Thursday night. Thank you, Peggy. P.S. My next cat is going to be named Tilgath Pileser. That will be a fine, fine cat name. For a probably fine, fine cat. But I'm in much the same circumstance because I have been educated by Dr. Bill, and of course, if you can always go over to whiterosesociety.org and subscribe to his podcast. Because of campaign exigencies and things that have been going on here, he has not been on the air as often as he would have liked in the last month or so. But he put up a dandy yesterday. And more to the point, a good long while back, he went to great pains to analyze the language, particularly of the preamble of the Declaration of Independence. Because there's a lot of Jonathan Locke in that, and no small amount of other Enlightenment philosophers. And so when you get to that line about the pursuit of happiness, as Dr. Bill has so often and so expertly opined, that's not just a throwaway phrase. The pursuit of happiness was something directly chosen in the drafting of that document. And it echoes down to us to this day. Back then, the prevailing phrase among followers of the Enlightenment and the privileged thinkers along those lines . The most prevalent phrase was the pursuit of property. And that phrase itself was loaded to the gills in 1776. To be fair, I reached out to Dr. Bill, but I think he's campaigning this evening. I wanted to see if he might be so kind as to join us for the program. But I didn't hear back. But the concept of property in 1776 included human beings. And you might recall that Thomas Jefferson, for whatever else he would later become, at that point in time was trying to insert language that was clearly anti-slavery language in the Declaration of Independence, but he was drowned out and voted down by the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, slave-owning followers of Christ, delegates to the Continental Congress from places like Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. And they were desperate to get the damn thing passed. And so away went the... Away went any overt statements against slavery. But that phrase, pursuit of happiness, remained. And if you are familiar with Dr. Bill's work, you know that that phrase, happiness, carries a lot more meaning than we attach it to it today. It does not mean the pursuit of some nebulous state of, you know, ooh, I won the lottery, or a new car, or oh golly gee, a 33rd potential flavor of breakfast cereal. I'm so happy. No, happiness, according to the meaning of the word at the time, is much more intimately related to the quality and state of the community in which a person lives. It is something that is derived from the cumulative quality of life of the whole body politic, or what the ancient Greeks would have referred to as the polis, P-O-L-I-S. Where in God's name is Bob going? Yeah, you'll see. Randy in PA says, I just can't follow Dr. Bill's logic. It would seem like there's a lot of informed opinion in what he says. I wonder what happens when a centrist liberal historian like him collides with the opinions of a conservative-leaning historian. Well, what happens is the conservative-leaning historian loses, Randy. Because the conservative-leaning historian isn't generally actually working from primary source material in its complete context. And that's why the person, and that's why the conservative loses. All history has opinion in it. But the fact of the matter is, if you read that which Dr. Bill directs folks to, and from which he takes his discussions, you'll see that there's no problem with his logic. His logic is pretty much impeccable, as is the case in his analysis of that phrase, the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of happiness stayed in there as a direct confrontation to the idea of the pursuit of property. Because Jefferson was trying to refute the idea that property was the only way by which one could define either success or happiness or contentment. And this all came into focus for me, you know, 240 years after the publication of the Declaration of Independence, this morning, when Charlotte Police Chief, I think his name's David Putney. I know his last name's Putney. I don't think his first name is, you know, Zebulon or anything. Stepped to the podium and explained that in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, the first consideration, his first consideration, and this is as near a quote as I can have without actually having the audio available to me, which I don't. His first consideration was the protection of, quote, our officers and property. And because I've spent so much time listening to Dr. Bill's discussion of that concept, my pink little ears perked right up. By that word, property. Because if you followed the accounts from last night in Charlotte, the night before, you will find that yes, there was what is called looting. You may recall from Hurricane Katrina that when a black person takes something not belonging to him or her during a crisis, that is called looting. But as the for-profit media taught us, when a white person does that, it's called foraging. So the word looting, like the word happiness, carries a subset of meaning that isn't necessarily readily discernible unless one is attuned to the history of the usage of the word. Now, the events that unfolded in Charlotte last night and the violence, which left one person in critical condition having been shot, and Charlotte officials swearing up and down that the police didn't do it, got mentioned. You know what didn't get mentioned in anything that the police chief of Charlotte had to say? The reason for the unrest in Charlotte. The deliberate, intentional killing of Keith Lamont Scott. His family says he was a disabled man, and his family says that he was waiting for a child and reading a book. The police say, no, he was a dangerous Negro with a gun. Because the totality of circumstances that surround the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott indicate that any black person with a gun is by definition dangerous. Now, anyone who knows my position on open carry or concealed carry understands that my position is that any person with a gun, especially in this country, especially given the fact that in most states no one is required to have any training, and in no state in this union is a civilian who wants to carry firearms required to even pass minimal psychological testing. That makes them all dangerous. But we are dealing with a legal framework in Charlotte where the open carrying of firearms is something, is afforded something along the lines of a natural right. You know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You're carrying that gun because you want to defend your life. You want to protect your liberty. and you want to continue to pursue happiness because you're scared to death that somebody, well, that's probably a bad phrase, because you're terrified that somebody is going to keep you from pursuing happiness by making you all dead. Yeah. And so there was not a word from Police Chief Putney about Keith Lamont Scott. Instead, he reiterated the determination of the Charlotte Police Department to protect property. Because the violence and the unrest that took place in a rather tony part of Charlotte. Near the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, for Christ's sakes. I mean, whatever are we to think? Some executive of Bank of America that's headquartered in Charlotte may have been staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Oh, my Jesus! Oh, the humanity! And may have been briefly exposed to seeing how the other half lives. Merciful God, what have we come to? Windows were broken. Things were stolen. Chief Putney says that they were going to be relentless in their pursuit of these property criminals because their chief purpose was to protect our officers and property. So I guess maybe like in the next couple of days, maybe in Charlotte they'll start rolling out cruisers with the new motto on them, to protect officers and serve property. In which case, I can only suggest that this problem is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. Years and years and years ago, I used to brew beer. Got pretty good at it, really. And the stuff that you make beer out of before it ferments and turns into beer is called wort, W-O-R-T. And the first thing you learn when learning to brew beer is that one must be very careful with one's wort. Because, among other things, in order for it to turn into beer later, it has to be raised to a pasteurizing temperature of at least 180 degrees. And it generally has to be raised to a boiling temperature. But the problem is because it is so laden with sugars, it can, one, scorch and stick very easily, and two, in a trice, in the blink of an eye, if you're not right there on top of it the whole time, it will foam and froth and boil over before you know what has even happened. And that is what is happening now. You know, the right-wingers love analogies with pots. They particularly prefer analogies that involve pots with frogs in them, where idiot frogs, and this is not scientifically true, but idiot frogs are said to remain in water that is gently warming up until they are actually boiled alive without having the common goddamn good sense to jump out. This is not that. This is more the case of the old saying about pots that a watched pot never boils. But it does, and that's another little line of bullshit that runs through our linguistic memory. It's kind of like the old line about if you're standing in a line, whatever line you're standing in a bank will be the slowest moving line, and even if you get into the line next to you that has only one person in it, that one person will be somebody that wants to make a $5,000 deposit in pennies. And the line you were in will... Yeah. It's anecdotal at best. Because the problem in a place like Charlotte is that the pot has boiled over. As it boiled over in Baltimore. As it boiled over in Ferguson. The pot has boiled over. And no one, and the argument can be made that no one was really watching it. For 8 years, we have watched a goddamned renaissance of racism in this country. And a growing, inescapable awareness by everyone except those who are completely awash in their own white privilege. That there is something terribly, terribly, horribly wrong in this country relative to the way the law is applied and executed as touching upon people of color. And so you get the Sean Hannity's of the world, that life support system for a haircut, declaiming, "Well, I heard that he had a bunch of arrest warrants out for him." So fucking what? I mean, therein lies the actual state of conservative thought in Merca today. A member of the Wingnut Commentariat effectively declares that if you have arrest warrants out for you, whether it be true or not, that justifies the police to murder you in cold blood. That was Hannity's assertion relative to Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is, of course, entirely untrue. Law enforcement, the police, sheriffs, what have you, their job is to investigate and apprehend the perpetrators of crime, not summarily execute them. The only judgment the police are to exercise in this is the question of whether or not they believe to a degree of reasonable certainty that a particular person has committed a particular crime. They then charge that person with a particular crime, and the court system, such as it is, takes over, determining guilt or innocence, and thereby, or thereafter, affixing the punishment prescribed by law. Nowhere in this process is shooting the guy because he has his hands in the air deemed to be an appropriate part of the equation. But that is where we find ourselves. The police in the United States of America, no matter what Sean Hannity or Miss White Privilege 2016 Tommy Lahren have to say, have engaged in far too many instances in a process whereby they have appointed themselves judge, jury, and executioner. And yet it seems that the first thing that we are determined to say is, well, not all cops. When not all cops is not even the consideration. The consideration, more properly, is why some cops? Or perhaps even, why too many cops? And the breaking news this afternoon is that throwing a sop to a grieving family, Betty Shelby, out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, will be charged with manslaughter. The cop union is outraged. How dare the judicial system actually try to sweep up and deal with one of our heroes in blue? A couple of weeks ago, the National Cop Union endorsed Donald J. Trump, Benito Cheeto, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, for President of the United States. Because the cop union says that he is for law and order. You know, because Hillary Clinton's such a goddamned anarchist. Nah, it's because Hillary Clinton's the devil. I mean, the cop union didn't carry a whole lot of get a lot of respect from me to begin with, and now it's now that they've endorsed Donald J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane. Well, now the cop what I feel for the cop union is searching for definition in numbers that are preceded by minus signs. But here's where it becomes problematic. Addressing the killing of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini made the horrible mistake of suggesting that Officer Betty Shelby, who already, before she killed Terrence Crutcher, had a history of drawing her weapon, that she may have choked. I think he actually used the term choked when she killed Terrence Crutcher. The cop union did not like this in the least. The cop union said, "We remind Mr. Trump that all people are entitled to due process and equal protection." Never realizing, of course, the manifest, tragic, blood-soaked irony in making that assertion when Terrence Crutcher was denied every last bit of that by their member, Betty Shelby. But charging her with manslaughter, you see, really is a sop. It was the most that the prosecuting attorney could bring himself to do. A killing, perhaps intentional, but maybe negligent. But, you know, not rising to the level of murder or nothing, even though the man had his hands up. Even though he was tased at the same time. Manslaughter. Or, depending on how you break all those letters up, as a matter of using the creative aspects of the art of word knowing, man's laughter. Because, of course, it's not like in Oklahoma, manslaughter gets you a spin on the horizontal crucifixion wheel. Hell, I don't even know if you can get 20 years for man's laughter. You may even be able to get probation. If there's even a trial, if the case ever even goes to a jury, and if the case is tried and the case does go to a jury and a verdict of guilty of man's laughter is returned against Betty, what do you suppose the odds of a sentence even remotely resembling the sorts of sentences handed down against people of color in this country, what do you suppose those odds are? Jug of Punch in the chat room tells me 4 years max in Oklahoma. Max! A person can get a hell of a lot more than that for having some rock cocaine in his pocket in Oklahoma. And in Charlotte, Chief Putney, says that the primary purpose of the Charlotte Police Department is to protect our officers and property. And the property he's talking about protecting is, for the most part, by and large, corporate property. Corporate property. And of course, you know why.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Meanwhile, this is the reality being lived by the Crutcher family. Interviewed on CNN yesterday. I warn you, this isn't easy. It's a hell of a lot harder than anything Betty Shelby will deal with. Just, well, you know, saying.
Trying to figure out a way to justify blaming Terrence Crutcher for his own death, Allison. When you look at that video, don't take our word for it. Look at the video. You can slow it down. We have technical experts that can enhance the video. And it clearly shows, and I'm sorry for this, y'all, that there's a streak of blood coming down from the window, coming down on the car, and then coming to where his body is resting with his hands up still. And it shows that it all is contemporaneous. Look at that video. It is all the evidence we need. We need not consider anything else but what our own eyes show us.
Tiffany, Terrence, you and Terrence are twins. We're watching an aerial footage right here of police in a helicopter who were over the scene. And there are snippets of audio of that chopper pilot and the other officer. And I just want to play a second of that for you and for our viewers of what they were saying.
He's got his hands up there for her now.
There's more.
Mike, I'm going to hit the recorder. This guy's still walking and following commands.
Not for taser, I think.
I've got a feeling that's about to happen.
That looks like a bad dude, too, to be yelling something.
Okay. Tiffany, when he says that looks like a bad dude, too, what do you see and hear?
I hear someone who was paid to protect and serve us, prejudging my brother. He didn't know my brother at all. And I have so many friends who are officers of the law, and they stand with us, and they say that's not representation of who our public servants are supposed to be. And it just validates what we've been angry about, what we've been confused about, what we've been hurt about.
Because he looks like a bad dude. What does that say to you?
It says that anyone who's big in stature or may have brown skin, it just seems like they automatically criminalize or demonize or say, hey, you know, we're going to get you. I mean, I'm really sad. And I have friends who have young boys, and they're afraid to go to driver's ed. They don't want driver's license. They're afraid, and that saddens me.
Let's take a moment here. One, that he looks like a bad dude comes from a cop in a helicopter. Earther asks, how does he look like a bad dude, Brother Bob, when he looks like a 2-inch toy figure on the video? And he looks like that probably even more so from high in the eye in the sky in the Tulsa Police Department helicopter. You know what would be interesting? And I don't know how you would even begin to do this. I don't know what kind of records preservation you have. But that guy, you know, people don't. For instance, if he had, if that police officer who uses a certain, you know, we all as human beings use certain speech patterns. They're on display for me every night for 3 hours. We all use certain speech patterns. So if the cop in the chopper had said, why, heavens to Murgatroyd, that looks like a dangerous Negro to me. Goodness me, look at his gargantuan girth. Unless that guy was prone to talk that way all the time, you'd go, huh, that sounds like some bullshit. So I think it's safe to say that the chopper cop probably uses that phrase, bad dude, with some frequency. Wouldn't it be interesting? And I'm just throwing this out there for consideration. One of the things that we learned from the revelations by Edward Snowden is that we got all kinds of crazy, super-duper, double-secret probation software running on the Uniblab 9000 somewhere about 15 feet from the mantle of the Earth in a deep hole at NSA headquarters somewhere near D.C. or out in Utah or God knows where. And part of that software's purpose is to listen to millions, if not billions, if not trillions of telephone calls and suss out particular words. What if we could use some of that super-duper double-secret probation software and play back the audio recordings of, say, the Tulsa Police Department. And find out, from a statistical standpoint, how often they look at a person and say, "Oh, that looks like a bad dude." How many times, for instance, do you suppose that they describe a 6'5" white guy with a shaven head and Aryan Nation tribal tattoos up his neck as a bad dude? Or is bad dude a phrase that they reserve for large black men? What would that then tell us? Too bad that super double secret probation software isn't available to analyze things that actually matter. Oh, by the way, did you happen to notice 500 million accounts over at Yahoo.com were stolen, probably by, the Russians or the Chinese or somebody like that. And oddly enough, our super-duper double-secret probation, all surveillance, all the time, security interfaces running on the Uniblab 9000, weren't able to stop that. They weren't able to stop a guy who put a bomb in a dumpster. They damn sure weren't able to stop a bunch of half-crazed, half-brained white idiots from invading a bird sanctuary. But wouldn't it be something if we could find out a little bit more about how cops talk about ordinary human beings and why they talk that way about ordinary human beings, especially when those ordinary human beings happen to have dark skin? Back to the recording. The bad dude!
I mean, you want them to know that your brother was not a bad dude. He was a father and a brother and a son.
He was all of that. On last night, I've been flooded with love and support from people all around the world, from all different backgrounds, all different cultures. And one that really broke me down and really touched my heart was one of his professors at Tulsa Community College, who said Terrence was in my sociology class last fall. He never missed a class. All he talked about was his children. And his final presentation that he did was on Christianity. And she said her heart breaks and she's going to miss him. And I lost it. And so that big bad dude mattered. He truly mattered.
And yet, Mr. Krupp, the police say that he wasn't following their instructions. Maybe he told them to stop. Maybe they told him to stop. Maybe they told him to get down. They said that that's what caused them concern, to either of you, that he wasn't following instructions. And police.
So not following instructions, just so that we don't miss anything here. Not following instructions. It was not following orders. Not following instructions is now sufficient cause in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the universe on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, with liberty for all and justice, hallelujah, sweet baby Jesus. It's cause for summary execution. Now, when that happens in other countries, we call those countries dictatorships. We spend $1 trillion bombing them into the Stone Age, and they say things about the leadership like, he tried to kill my daddy, or he killed his own people. Guess what? We kill our own people, too. Oh, but we're the good guys, right? As Brother Deacon Asa points out, come on, Bob. Crutcher was slightly darker than a paper bag. It's standard copperating procedure. I see what you did there, Asa. Clarence, with an email, just wondering, says, Bob, do you think misogyny played a part in that fast charge? Maybe the fact that she was female made it easier. But the cop union is just as incensed. The cop union is just as furious. How dare they charge her when she's gotten up every morning and put her life on the line for you ingrates, citizens of Tulsa? How dare you? You don't deserve our protection. Because that's an inquiry we have to make. That's one of those things we don't want to look at. That's one of those ways of solving the problem we probably won't deal with because we can't stand to. And that is the degree to which in this country, in 2016, the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, police have become a protection racket. Nice little Ritz-Carlton you got there. I guess we'll have to call out the SWAT team and tear gas a few people because we wouldn't want anything to happen to your Ritz-Carlton hotel there in Uptown Charlotte. Yeah, meanwhile, prediction coming from Robert somewhere near Morgantown that if convicted, the Tulsa policewoman, Shelby, 6 months max in a minimum security white-collar facility. Can you imagine the outrage of the cop union if a cop was ever actually charged with murder, tried, and convicted? It would be audible in the vast vacuum depths of space, their outrage. You know, in order to get a conviction, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt each and every element of the crime alleged to have been committed. Let's take a quick look here at a couple of different statutes, shall we? Here's Oklahoma's second degree murder, otherwise known as heat of passion murder. A homicide occurs whenever one person takes the life of another. Okay, this is just by way of explanation. Oklahoma Penal Code Section 21701(8), murder in the second degree. Second-degree murder occurs in the following instances. When a killing is done by an act that is eminently dangerous to another person and indicates a depraved mind, although done without premeditation. Or when a killing is committed by a person engaged in a felony other than those set out, yada, yada, yada. Depraved mind, frequently defined as moral corruption or perversion. These thoughts are shown, proven, by a capacity for extreme and deliberate physical cruelty. So we don't have a premeditation situation in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I doubt there could be any proof that Officer Shelby headed out saying, I'm going to kill that Terrence Crutcher today. So, no. Nope. No first degree. How about felony murder? Felony murder is a charge that is most often used and disproportionately used and enshrined in the statutes of the South so it can be used against people of color. The guy who's sitting in this, at the steering wheel of the car while somebody goes in and knocks off the Rippy Mart and winds up killing somebody, the guy at the wheel of the car is going up big time. Life. Maybe even, yes, capital punishment. Well, what is the deliberate deprivation of civil rights? Aren't there felony statutes regarding that? If Officer Shelby deliberately deprived Terrence Crutcher of his civil rights, and death has a way of doing that, then shouldn't the other three officers, and perhaps even the officers in the helicopter, be charged with felony murder? First degree murder in North Carolina includes felony murder. Murder by means of a weapon of mass destruction, by poison, lying in wait, imprisonment, starving, torture, or by any other kind of willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing in the perpetration of or attempted perpetration of any arson, rape, or a sex offense, robbery, kidnapping, burglary, or other felony committed or attempted with the use of a deadly weapon. Felony deprivation of civil rights? Is that real? I have no answer. But we're not going to solve this problem. I mean, we as a nation. Because we do not wish to pursue the logical, reasonable, and rational courses such solutions must perforce follow. And that is a far greater degree of potential criminal liability when cops kill people intentionally and deliberately. What's Betty Shelby going to say in Oklahoma? That she was shooting to wound? That she was only shooting to maim? It was deliberate. It was willful. It was intentional. And to the extent that she was shooting to kill, it was with intent to deprive the man of his civil rights. Well, I didn't mean to deprive him of his civil rights. Well, ma'am, what did you mean when you shot to kill? Did you expect him to have some sort of vestigial civil rights that would remain with him after death? Let's go back to the audio.
Police probably would have said, get down, don't go to your car. Why wouldn't he have followed those instructions if that's what was issued?
Well, we do know. We don't know what was said because...
Hold on a minute. Man, I think we got us some white privilege here in the form of the Chicken Noodle News interviewer, Allison Camerota. All about why he didn't get down on the ground. I mean, ponder this for a moment, will you? Please. In the great gun discussion here in Merca, the NRA and gun goobers of America and all your various and sundry Bubbas and Joe Bobs and Billy Humps and whatnot will tell you that they need a freedom protector for self-defense. And self-defense is always available as a defense in the use of force. God knows the cops use it a lot. I was scared. That's why I killed him. But ponder this. Even though the defense of self-defense is one of the most ancient affirmative defenses in the Anglo-English-American common law, for all intents and purposes, you have no right of self-defense against the police. Even if the police are acting illegally, you have no right of self-defense against them. You must allow them to do their illegal acts, hope you survive, or that if you don't, someone will find out that they were acting illegally and then pursue justice against them. If the police are coming through your door and they do not have a warrant, or they've got a warrant for, you know, the house three doors down, and you're standing there waiting for them with a gun and they blow your brains out, you didn't have a right to defend yourself against those police because they were acting in good faith, baby. If they shoot at you illegally and you return fire, you do not have that right in America, land of the free. If you've got a bad cop who's screaming, "Get on the ground! Get on the ground! God damn it! Get on the ground! You bad dude!" You have no right to defend yourself against that illegal conduct. The only thing you can do in America is always obey the police. Because if you don't, they can kill you, especially if you're black. These are facts that are borne out statistically and legally. There have been cases, I remember in the last, year, 2 years, there was a police department running a shakedown operation in Texas where they would stop motorists and take from them whatever money they had on them. And the victims had no right at all to defend themselves against that illegal conduct. And if they tried to complain, there was an entire bureaucracy dedicated to making sure that the so-called long arm of justice never touched the crooked cops in that community in Texas. And we have no desire at all in this country to address that reality. And if you ask the lily-white, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexuals, well, what about Keith Lamont Scott, even if he had a gun? What about Philando Castile, who said he had one and they blew him away? What do the precious white gun owners say? Well, he's probably brandishing. If you brandish, all bets are off. See, they don't really know how to carry guns like us good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexuals do. We know not to brandish.
except they brandish a lot. And they wind up not getting killed.
Like the cop in North Carolina from a few weeks back who said, well, you know, he was squeezing a few rounds off at Motors and stuff, but we found out he's all drunk and liquored up. I mean, he was drunker than Cooter Brown. And I'm just glad our officers were able to deal appropriately with the situation, and he was able to be brought in, taken under arrest, and we were able to get him the help that he so badly needed. I mean, Betty Shelby in Tulsa, Oklahoma, said that she shot Terrence Crutcher because he put his hands in the air erratically. So apparently there's a standard of how black people are supposed, a proper way for people of color to put their hands in the air to avoid being shot. And if you don't do it the right way, the Betty Shelbys of the world will blow you away. But this get on the ground business, this Allison Camerota is providing an excuse for the cops. Arthur pointing out, that drunk white shooty guy, it's not like he was dangerous. Dangerous. Right. His non-dangerousness was defined by the color of his skin. And yes, the guy who shot Keith Lamont Scott in Charlotte was a black police officer. And of course, we were all supposed to be put at ease because Chief Putney, who came to the microphone this morning talking about how they were going to protect their officers and property, well, he was a black man, too. See how it works? But let's go back to this get-on-the-ground business. Why is she providing cover for the woman who blew away Terrence Crutcher?
There's no audio, but what we do know is that we have a video. It does not have a political affiliation. It does not have an ulterior motive. We have a video we can clearly see. We don't have to explain it. We can see on the video that Terrence did not have a weapon. We can see on the video that Terrence has his hands up in the air. We can see on the video that Terrence was moving in a very slow and deliberate manner. We see very clearly on the video that Terrence never made a sudden movement towards the officers or towards going inside of the vehicle. We can see on the video that when Terrence was shot, the officers were not in any imminent harm.
And it was broad daylight, Allison, the whole time, and there was no justification for this use of excessive force.
The police say that they found the drug, PCP, inside the car. Do you believe that?
Until such time there is definitive proof of that, Allison Camerota, why are you even bringing it up?
Them.
We don't know what they found in the car. We were taken at their word because they got all the quote-unquote evidence in their custody. They say they're going to be transparent. This is an opportunity for the leadership to be transparent so they can build a trust with this Tulsa community that maybe can be an example, Allison, for communities all over America. We see what's happening in Charlotte. We saw what happened in Sanford, Florida, when Mike Bryan put his hands up. We see what happened in Tamir Rice in Cleveland. And when you're not transparent and the community feel they cannot trust you, then we have terrible things that happen in our communities.
Would that change the equation for you if there were PCP in the car and if that meant that somehow he was debilitated by having taken a drug somehow?
Allison, you look at that video and nothing in that video justifies them using excessive lethal force on him. And
Allison, you precious, privileged little white girl. Have you ever seen anybody under the influence of PCP? What you see on the video of Terrence Crutcher is not a guy under the influence of PCP. PCP will make you have fights with brick walls. PCP will make you rush people with guns to your eternal regret. These things were not happening. And even if they were, it is not cause for summary execution, which is what we are dealing with.
If we're going to start declaring the death sentence to anybody that has drugs in their system, where they're going to go to a lot of communities, not just our community, and God help America.
Tiffany, you and your brother, your twins, as I said, you just celebrated your 40th birthday a month ago, and on that day he told you that he was looking forward to the future and what his plans were.
Yes. He told me that he was excited about the future, excited about starting school. I have a final text message, the very last one, where he told me that he loved me. I told him that I loved him, and he said, God is going to get the glory out of my life in that text message. And we're a family of faith, and we know that all things work together for the good. And if any good comes out of this, if any good can come out of this, we're hoping that America will open their eyes, everybody, and see that there's an issue, a systemic issue that needs to be solved. And we're pleading with the leadership of this country, everyone, to just see that, and let's put some systems in place to prevent this from happening again.
And yet, Reverend Crutcher, you wake up this morning and there are protests in Charlotte, North Carolina, because there's been another incident, not the same. This man, police say, did have a gun, but he was sitting in his car. These are the
Man, she... Just wow. She's got her talking points straight from white America, doesn't she? Good question, Brother Deacon Asa. How do we know the cop wasn't on PCP? I mean, you know, because cop. Is it fair to be suspicious of the PCP claim? Somehow, somehow I feel like, people are entitled to wonder if the cops might have planted something like that in order, you know, because that's not just another cop, that's their union sister. That's part of the thin blue line between America's ungrateful population and criminal chaos. Right? Well, let's let the white apologist go on for a little while. So white, so blonde. I guess that provides her a shield by which she can provide talking points for the Tulsa Police Department.
Protests you're waking up to this morning, another incident. What are your thoughts when you see this continuing to happen?
It's just a continuation of the same thing over and over and over again. And it's perpetuated against people of color more than anything else. If it would have been in the reverse, if it would have been a Caucasian, it would have been totally different, because there are records that indicate and show that this situation wouldn't have happened if that would have been a Caucasian. And if the circumstances were in reverse, Terrence would have been charged immediately.
Mrs. Crutcher, how are Terrence's kids doing?
Well, they're doing the best that they can do at this present time. What's breaking my heart is that his youngest son, we call him Little Terrence, asked me day before yesterday, where's my dad? Because he hadn't seen him, you know, in a couple of days. So in his mind, he's wondering what's going on. So we told him, because we are people of faith, that Dad went to heaven. And that kind of satisfied him for the moment, because he knows Dad is in a good place. So
Hillary Clinton talked about your case She called it intolerable to see something like this. What do you think that this is now a national conversation about what happened to your son?
Shut up.
It's now a national conversation about what happened to your son. Aren't you glad? Hillary Clinton said this is intolerable. How is, the woman just explained to Allison Camerota that she had to tell her son's son that daddy had gone to heaven, and the next thing on this practitioner of bullshit journalism can think to ask is, what about Hillary Clinton? Damn, 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 damn. There's no room in the for-profit media for grief that isn't somehow tangentially rubbed off against by the tawdry filth of our politics. What is the purpose of a question like that? What journalistic purpose does it serve? And this question, coming from Ron and Raleigh, once again, really? Who in the hell has access to PCP? That shit is so passé, it only exists in the evidence lockers of police departments. Oh, really, Ron? Might that be a clue? Meanwhile, a note from Jenny in Wisconsin. Subject line, PCP. I thought I was smoking a joint. I did smoke PCP once. It was horrible. I jumped out of a moving car. Was transported in an ambulance and remember thinking, well, they have the sirens on. Arrgh! I'm so happy I survived until now. But I'm an old whitey. And so on Facebook, I posted a thing, Jenny says, about kids kneeling down. Here's the response I got. The fucking little shitheads have absolutely no idea the sacrifice that others made to allow them the freedom to protest. Completely disrespectful, ungrateful fuckheads that have no fucking clue. And having just about filibustered an entire half the program away, just a couple more things, and then we'll open the phones. First, there was the remark by Terence Crutcher's mother that we know that all things work together for good. Now, since we got a lot of folks in the Horn Family Community Congregation, who, unlike me and a few others, were not dipped by the heel in batshit crazy Bible from the time that they were too young to remember, it might be beneficial to provide some context for that comment. It comes from the book of Romans in the New Testament. The book of Romans is to the writings of St. Paul what Dark Side of the Moon is to Pink Floyd. It's his greatest hit. And it is filled with madness. And Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to his purpose." Put that in context, let's go back a couple of verses. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, what doth he yet hope for? See what I mean about Pink Floyd? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. Likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities. For we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searcheth the hearts knoweth what is the mind of the Spirit, because he maketh intercession for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. And whom he called, them he also justified. And whom he justified, them he also glorified. What shall we then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things, except the power not to be gunned down by the Tulsa Police Department in the middle of a street because his car broke down, chariot? And I say that not as a criticism of the grieving Crutcher family, but perhaps as an observation that a little bit less of that pacifistic turn the other cheek crap, and maybe something begins to change. I'm not talking about be violence, but stop with this business of, well, I guess God wanted it to happen, because that word, predestinate, in other words, according to the madness of St. Paul, Terence Crutcher was born for the sole and exclusive purpose of being blown away for no decent damned reason, and certainly no criminal reason, or no justiciable reason, or no convicted reason, by Officer Betty Shelby. And that's a problem. Because if we are not creatures of free will, if we are not actualized participants in our own lives, but are rather little marionettes oblivious to the strings being pulled by some psychopathic deity in the sky, then what's the point in being here? And that do whatever thou wilt unto me and mine attitude has been ingrained into a certain strain of Christianity. Because, you know, there's a better world a-coming. And I can say this because it is rampant inside my community and inside my heritage in Appalachia. Well, yeah, he got blown up and burned up and smothered and buried in the mines, but now he's in a better place. Yeah, but don't you want to I mean, don't you want to make sure that the coal company doesn't do that anymore? Well, it's God's will. It weren't the coal company; it were God's will. And even through the long struggle for human dignity in the Appalachian coal fields, there were always preachers in the pulpit saying, "You got no business raising your voice. Don't do that." Accept God's plan for your life. But see, I'm free. And free of all that. And I can and I can say that if you just lay down and take it, they will keep doing it to you. Subject line from Tracy, the lady cab driver. "I'm tired," she says. So let me get this straight. Did she say that Charlotte and OKC is unrelated, Allison Camerota? Well, I mean, it's not the same. It's different. The police say that that Keith Lamont Scott had a gun. They have no proof. They won't let out the video. The law of the state of North Carolina is specifically designed to keep people from having access to body cams and dash cams. You have to go to a sitting circuit judge, which means you have to hire a lawyer and go through a long, drawn-out judicial process to get at it. Tracy says, so let me get this straight. Did she say that Charlotte and OKC or Tulsa are unrelated just because he allegedly had a gun? And what is this PCP bullshit? Bob, let me tell you something. I think about how many times my car broke down years ago. Never in a million years would I have thought that I could be shot because of it, or even worse, my brothers, or how often my son sits in his car reading a book or just listening to music. I'm a person of faith, Bob, but I tell you, it is tested every time I call my son and he doesn't answer. My heart quickens, my breathing becomes labored, and anxiety sets in until he calls me back. I tell you this, if something ever happened to my child, I promise you, I would not be quoting Scripture. And I think, Tracy, that you are sincere when you say that, because you are an empowered person. Your faith is a way to get through your days. It is not an excuse for whatever the world chooses to do to you. You see, to the same extent that stuff was leveraged onto poor whites laboring in Appalachia, it was damned well leveraged onto people of color first during slavery and ever after. And it was largely Calvinistic, and it was a way of making sure that people who were enslaved and abused had their lives stolen from them, understood that that's the way God wanted it. But if they would pray and pray day by day, there'd be pie in the sky when they die. Note coming from Clarence, subject line PCP. Bob, let the Horn Family Community Congregation know that PCP is alive and not well in the city of brotherly love. I'm from North Philly, the hood, and that nasty stuff is rampant right along with crack. I have a female relative who lost custody of her children last year for using that stuff. You can go to any large metro area and get your hands on it. PCP is used by many a folk where I come from. Thank you, Clarence. And separately, just wrapping things up now that I've filibobstered past the halfway mark of the program. A note. Thank you, Brother Bob.
I listened to last night's podcast earlier. I had to sleep because I'm exhausted from all that's happened with James these last several months, or else I would have emailed you earlier. It is hard being a caregiver because, A, it is just you, and, B, you never want to admit you're overwhelmed because you don't want it to be about you, which means, C, you leave yourself vulnerable and fragile. I'm fairly lost right now, but people like you help keep me going, and I do have some good support. Anyway, I need to express my sincere thanks to you for ending the show last night the way you did, playing the Al Green song and the lovely tribute. You brought us much joy and continue to do so for me, even though, OMFG, the stories you covered on Prayer Meeting Wednesday were so horrible it makes me wish there was a real hell for these sick fucks to go to. Okay, so even though my financial situation is sketchy right now, I want to contribute $30 to the cause in honor of James, and how I wish it could be $300 or $3,000. And if anybody wants to kick in for the cause in honor of the man I love, that would be cool. Love you and the community, as always. Signed, Rico in the Berg. Thank you, Rico. Thank you for those kind words. And I hope we all understand especially through the course of the last few days, that this community does go far beyond simply a radio show. It is a community. I said at the beginning of my remarks, that the essence of that word, happiness, in that phrase, pursuit of happiness, meant so much more than we generally understand the word to mean. And in fact, happiness, as it was used by the Enlightenment and in the late 18th century, it didn't merely encompass joy, but it also wrapped its arms around a community's ability to provide some surcease of sorrow, some protection, camaraderie, comfort. Because if the pursuit of happiness is merely the pursuit of one's own personal satisfaction, it does not take anyone very long to find out and realize that that is no happiness at all. But in point of fact, that pursuit of happiness is taking place here, in this community, among a group of people here by choice, who stand together with each other, share hopes, ambitions, and yes, sorrows. So, while it may seem strange to say it, let me simply remark that when we share our grief, when we share our misery, that too is a mark of the reality and the decency, the goodness and the kindness, and indeed, the happiness, however twisted that may seem, of us all gathered together in this humble little group, extends its thanks in allowing us to be better people
for the sharing that takes place.
So at 20 minutes before 8 p.m., we'll take a break. Open the lines to your calls, your thoughts. Feel free to share them. Your feelings. Feel free to share those, too. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178. The stress line is 304-663-4676. It works for some, not so well for others. No rhyme or reason to it. And of course, from anywhere on planet Earth, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Green News reports on the way, this being a thorn in the side Thursday. And oh, by the way, there's thorns too. Nothing brings out the stupid in the right wing quite like watching them turn themselves pretzel-like, trying to run away from their racism and their privilege at the same time that they swear they have neither. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. We'll be back.
It's Thursday, September 22nd, 2016.
There is no time to waste. Today will take us one step closer to bringing the Paris Agreement into force this year.
Enactment of United Nations landmark climate agreement reaches crucial threshold. White House orders federal agencies to account for climate change in national security planning. Good news and bad news in the Arctic.
Uh-oh.
Plus,
if we don't act boldly, the bill that could come due will be mass migrations and cities submerged and nations displaced and food supplies decimated and conflicts born of despair.
But other than that,
President Obama tells the world to put its money where its mouth is.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Here it is again, another reference to climate change as though it's real and it's destructive, and it's not. It's an absolute hoax.
Yes, after 16 straight months of record heat, in September of 2016, Rush Limbaugh is still saying that to his suckers and his chumps and his stooges. And this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Rush Limbaugh propaganda and lies aside, a lot of climate change news going on this week.
Oh, huge climate change news going on this week. First, the White House on Wednesday released a new presidential memorandum ordering all federal agencies that deal with national security to include the impacts of climate change in all of their plans and policies going forward.
Even though it's a hoax?
Yeah. The release coincided with a new report from the National Intelligence Council, which identified significant climate change impacts that will challenge U.S. national security at home and abroad, including potentially destabilizing volatile regions over the next 20 years.
Total hoax.
Meanwhile, it looks like UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's efforts to get the Paris Agreement enacted before the next U.S. president comes into office may be paying off. On Wednesday, the United Nations announced that 60 nations have formally signed on to the historic Paris Agreement, the international accord to fight the global threat of climate change. That means the pact has met the first of two hurdles required for it to come into force. But the countries represent just 48% of global greenhouse gas emissions, falling just short of the second threshold, requiring 55% of emissions to be covered. At a special ceremony at the UN in New York, the Secretary General pushed the laggards to move quickly to enact the compact before the end of the year.
The remarkable support for this agreement reflects the urgency and magnitude of the challenge. There is no time to waste.
The remaining 7% of global emissions needed to meet that second threshold could be achieved by the end of the year with the European Union. But that would be record speed for any international diplomatic compact in history.
And remarkably, China has signed on to the Paris Agreement, even though, if you hear Donald Trump tell it, they're responsible for the climate change hoax. Go figure.
It's important to note that the emissions pledges in the agreement are not yet enough to keep global temperatures within the agreed-upon limit of 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. With that gap in mind, President Obama, in his last address as president to the United Nations General Assembly, called on wealthy nations to put their money where their mouth is and accelerate funding to help developing nations.
The Paris Agreement gives us a framework to act, but only if we scale up our ambition. And there must be a sense of urgency about bringing the agreement into force and helping poorer countries leapfrog destructive forms of energy. So for the wealthiest countries, we need to invest in research and provide market incentives to develop new technologies and then make these technologies accessible and affordable for poorer countries.
You know, all kidding aside, what's so terrifying about this is that even if everyone enacts this Paris Agreement, it still, according to scientists, won't be enough to save us from where we're going.
Also at the United Nations meeting, 81 corporations announced they are committing to cutting their emissions by switching to renewable energy in all of their operations. Signing on to the RE100 program during the UN's Climate Week were Bank of America, Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and General Motors, who joined earlier adopters Walmart, Johnson & Johnson, and Procter & Gamble in pledging to switch to 100% renewable electricity by 2020 and going carbon neutral by 2050.
Of course, because they're all in on the hoax.
All of this momentum comes not a moment too soon. A new study concludes that global wheat production, one of the world's most important food crops, will likely take a hit from climate change. An international team of researchers concludes that a global temperature increase of 1 degree Celsius would lead to a decrease of up to 6% in wheat yields worldwide, even as world population increases.
And yet August 2016 was almost 1 degree Celsius warmer than it has ever been.
And finally, in the Arctic, summer is over, meaning sea ice has reached its lowest extent of the year. The good news is the sea ice loss this year wasn't a record.
Hey, good.
But the bad news is it was the second lowest on record. 2012 remains in the top spot.
Not as good. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
There's no time left for you. No time left for you.
Thorn in the Side, Thursday on the Horn, this 22nd day of September 2016. 9 minutes before the hour, and just a quick update before going to the phones. In case you were wondering, with the announcement of a charge of first-degree manslaughter against Betty Shelby in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the local prosecutor, Tulsa County District Attorney Stephen Kunzweiler, announced... although she's charged, she's presumed innocent until a judge or jury determines otherwise. I don't know why things happen in the world the way they do. We could do a little bit more of that verbal research on Prosecutor Kunzweiler. And we could maybe check out and see when the last time he reminded the public that a criminal defendant was innocent until proven guilty. When was the last time Prosecutor Kunzweiler did that for somebody busted for having a bag of weed? Or charged with a B&E? Or a rape? Or when was the last time somebody charged with killing somebody else? When was the last time Prosecutor Kunzweiler reminded the public that that person was innocent until proven guilty? When was the last time that Prosecutor Kunzweiler lamented, I don't know why things happen in this world the way they do? When was the last time he said that the accused wasn't a cop? Never? I'm betting never. Oh, and by the way, just so you can all stop worrying, arrangements have been made for Officer Betty Shelby to turn herself in on the arrest warrant. She can just go and present herself at the Tulsa County Sheriff's Department, and she'll be booked, and she'll be printed, and she'll be photographed, and they'll try to get a judge to set bond for her as quickly as possible, so that she doesn't have to spend any nasty time behind bars, awaiting further justice. And lucky for her, she's only charged with manslaughter, so. So bond is available. The only charge in this country for which you can't get bond is murder. Lucky Betty. Let's run over and talk to Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here so trying not to cry because I just think about all those times that I've broken down. My son is broken down, my brothers, and I'm like, you know, never in a million years would I have ever thought about to worry about, you know, being shot. I'm like sitting in my cab right now. I'm in Thousand Oaks. So yeah, that's the, you know, upper middle class part of, you know, Southern California. And, you know, what happens if somebody calls the cops and thinks, yeah, you know, she's a threat. How many more people have to die? And, you know, it's like that, where I wrote you an email about, you know, yes, I'm a person of faith and everything, but you know what? There's something about accountability, too. And like you said, you know, the people have used the Bible to justify, you know, slavery, violence against women, the oppression of women, and use, like you said, used to keep people from raising their voices. Because whatever happens to you is God's will. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I don't believe it's God's will that people who shoot and kill and murder innocent, unarmed black people, that is not his will. Because if it was his will, then we would still be in slavery. If it was his will, then I wouldn't be able to do the things that I can do as a black person. But my thing is, it's not his will that I have to worry about being killed. But it is his, but the thing is, he holds people accountable for their actions. That's my thing. I'm like, and I don't mean held accountable, you know, when that person dies. I mean accountable in real time. You just can't, you know, I know he says, vengeance is mine, so saith the Lord, I will do this and that. But no, I do believe that he wants to, that people have to be held accountable. Did not Jesus go, when he got pissed off with the money changers and all that, did he not go into the temple and kick shit down? Because he's like, I'm
Yeah, and they kill, and that's when they decided to kill him, Tracy.
Right. Because he's like, this is some bullshit. You are not doing my father's, you're not doing this in my father's house. That is not what this is for. So for these fools to come, you know, and that bitch on Chicken Noodle News. See, this is why.
Well, I mean, what if this person that you loved and knew every day of your life, what if he really was on the PCP? Wouldn't the cops be okay with what they did then?
And like anybody that knows anybody or has seen people under the influence of PCP, had that brother been under the influence of PCP, he would not be walking away from the cops with his hands up. He would be charging them.
Yeah.
He would be, you know, you don't.
Yeah, but precious Allison Camerota can sit there and say, well, see, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to pretend I'm all concerned. And then when it's over, I'm going to do a different news story. And then at the end of the day, I'm going to go home to my nice home. Because, see, I make $1 million a year and you don't.
And you don't. See, what I would love to see, because, see, you know, you just did the audio. I can't even imagine.
Oh, she was sitting at the end. She was sitting at the end of the couch, and she was using her people skills, Tracy. And she was leaning in and listening, and getting ready to ask him about the PCP.
Right. What now? I'm talking about the facial expression of his family members, because his sister's sounding like she's about to get like, I'm about to mollywop this bitch.
Yeah.
But you know, we're so expected, and I'm like, I could not. They could never interview me. If something ever, God help my soul, if anything ever happened to my child, because I guarantee you, if a bitch came at me like that, I'm not going to be the noble Negro. I am going to go, there will be some F-bombs. I'm like, fuck you, you stupid bitch. Okay, I'm going.
But see, that's not Tracy. No offense, dear. That is not acceptable.
And I was started off with, I know I am about to get real. I am about to become that. I'm going to become that angry black woman.
Cut to break. No. Tell them we got to go to break. Okay, good, Allison. Go to break.
Go to break, but I'm sorry.
Because you're not gonna get to violate the established norms of the for-profit media. Although, I've got some good news. I think this is good news. You know how often it is that you, me, the Horn Family Community Congregation, and the rest of us agree with Joe Scarborough, right? Like never.
Oh yeah, like all the time, dead guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's hope. You know, that bit from Romans 8, talking all about hope and hope for things unseen and all that stuff. Well, guess what? Do you know what Joe Scarborough said? And I know, who watches him, who cares, whatever. But look, in a situation like this, you take baby steps where you can find them. Joe Scarborough actually said, who cares if Terrence Crutcher had PCP?
He said that?
He said, who cares? if Terrence Crutcher had PCP. And then he went on. He said, if you're white, if you're from the neighborhoods that we live in, and your arm's in the air, you could have like pounds of coke in the back of your car and be straight out of Miami Vice, and you wouldn't get treated like that.
Wait.
Yeah, that feels kind of watershed-ish, doesn't it?
Wow, so he didn't do that white splaining like the bitch on Chicken Little News?
No. And he didn't get all Hannity. But this is troublesome in its own right, Tracy, because we're sitting here going, oh, my God, a batshit crazy right-winger just said what we all know to be true. Glory! I mean, it's like the, here, since we're being biblical on a Thursday, it's like the prodigal son. Kill the fatted fucking calf, right? Joe Scarborough had acknowledged his own white privilege.
Well, again, it's like, you know, the guy who was shooting at the cops, they managed to get beamed. Why is it that everybody has, you know, when it comes to white people being disarmed or what have you, you know, and de-escalating a situation, they have beanbags for them. Why can't we get some beanbags for the brothers?
Well, see, they tried that. The British tried that during the Zulu Wars. And beanbag won't slow down an angry brother. He's just gonna knock him beanbags out of the air as they're flying to him, and keep on a coming.
I forget. I'm sorry, Bob. I forget that.
No, Tracy, you don't forget. Just as much as I can't fully understand, I can't know what it's like to be you. You can't know what it's like to be white. You cannot know how terrifying it is just knowing you share an entire country with black people.
How do you deal with it?
Liquor, mostly.
I think I posted it on the Horn family page about it was an awesome article about why white people are so uncomfortable with, you know, Black Lives Matter or saying the word black, and, you know, talk about that racism and how, you know, middle class white people who would never say that, you know, nigga and all this other stuff, or, you know, definitely will never be charter members of the KKK and all that, because see, they have it in their minds about that overt racism, that separate but equal and all that. Oh, that's horrible. That's how dare people treat, you know, people that way and stuff like that. That is so wrong. But then you have, I can't even say her name because I don't remember it, because she's not important to me. The woman on CNN, you know, that did the interview, and it's like, really? That's racism. What you were saying, you were just basically saying, what if, you know, he had PCP, and then, you know, about the brother that, allegedly had a gun. But as you have pointed out on so many occasions, North Carolina is an open carry state, so what if he had a gun? Isn't that his right as a citizen of the state of North Carolina that he should be able to carry a fucking gun? Oh yeah, no, because he's black. So automatically, it is automatic.
Well, look, it's a Chinese puzzle box. It's a trick box here, because see, black people don't need to open carry guns, because the reason white people open carry guns is because of black people. Okay,
right.
But then, you know, the good black people who want to carry guns because other black people, they can't do that. But then if anything gets said, the first thing that some white winger is going to say is, well, God damn it, what about Chicago? What about all that black on black crime? That damn Barack Obama's taking America to hell.
Yeah, well, you can't win.
I can't win.
You can't win. I mean, the bitch on, you know, that posted on the page about saying, you know, we didn't have racism in this country until 2008 when Barack Obama was elected. I'm sorry, not 2008. He was elected in 2008. 2009 officially, because if you really want to be, you know, it's because of Barack Obama that we have racism. Because we never had issues with racism until he became president. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. And see, we can't even keep up anymore. I'm looking at two stories right now. Okay, one, Tracy. This is out of Baltimore. 21-year-old black man. This don't end well. I'll just warn you. Another on the list of things black people cannot be: mentally ill. Remember, the guy in Milwaukee was mentally ill when Sheriff David Clarkey, the get tough on crime, law and order black sheriff of Milwaukee County, allowed him to be killed by thirst. You know, torture.
He's a black man.
Well, okay. Ooh. So here's a 21-year-old black man in Baltimore. His girlfriend calls 911 and tells the 911 operator that her boyfriend's acting crazy. And then his grandma says, yeah, he ain't right. Acting kind of strange, like he was on something. That's what grandma said. So, you know, the police break camp and go rolling over to the scene of the location for the apprehension of the person of the suspect. And when they get there, they say that Tawan Boyd appeared to be confused and paranoid, sweating heavily. And when he saw the cops roll up, you know what Tawan Boyd did? He started banging on doors, begging people to let him in.
Let me in.
And so they went to arrest him, and then, of course, the police say he resisted. And then they ganged up on him.
Which is the death sentence. Did you see?
Wait,
there's more.
Then the cops moved into gang formation. You know, we have a gang violence problem in this country, and some of it's perpetrated by the police.
Yep. And
grandma, whose name is Linda Birch, she said, after they took him down, he was just hollering and screaming on the ground, and they just kept pushing him down on his shoulder and back and stuff, hitting him. He's trying to get him off of him. And they pinned him to the ground. Medics showed up and gave him some sort of drug to calm him down. God only knows what. The police will not allow the report to say what drug they gave him.
Of course not.
The lawyer for the family says Mr. Boyd was in need of medical attention and the police responded with violence. The police beat him into intensive care and now he's no longer with us. They beat him to death.
He
lasted 3 days in the hospital after they beat him to death. I guess we're just lucky they didn't tie the chain from an old cotton gin fan around him, right?
Pretty much.
So that's that. Meanwhile, Florida. Where a man who was a well-known church musician, a drummer, a man by the name of Corey Jones, 31 years old, assistant manager of the Delray Beach Housing Authority. Sometime in the late Saturday night, early morning hours, his car broke down on the side of the road.
Oh, God, here we go.
Officer Numan Raja stopped to invest. Numan Raja stopped to investigate what he believed to be an abandoned vehicle along I-95 exit ramp about 3:15 on Sunday. That's when he was suddenly confronted by an armed subject. Now, Numan Raja was in an unmarked car and was a plainclothes cop. So
he wasn't even in uniform and in a marked vehicle. Okay.
So Corey Jones had no idea. And, of course, remember, Florida, if you're even a little bit scared, you can use your Freedom Protector.
Right.
And so he, Numan Raja claims he saw the gun, and that forced him to blow Mr. Jones away. Meanwhile, he had called his brother, Mr. Jones had called his brother to tell him the car was broke down and he was having trouble.
Was this a while ago? This happened. I'm sorry for interrupting, but this was new. This happened.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. This is not brand new, but this is a reminder. Yeah, this is October 2015, almost a year ago.
Okay.
Nobody learned anything from that, did they?
Nope.
Police departments still haven't learned from Trayvon Martin or Eric Garner or Walter Scott, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland. So how is it? When is it, Tracy, that great morning's going to come when the lights go on for the police in this country? That maybe they're doing something wrong.
Even if we
strap one to a chair and run some 440 through them for a while, will they learn then? And by that, I mean the death penalty or the horizontal crucifix or, you know, the shot by firing squad in Utah. Will that teach them anything? No, it'll just piss them off more.
Right. It just reminds me, you know, that when you talk about the liberty and justice for all and in the pursuit of happiness, but it made me think of back after the Civil War, during Reconstruction, and how the federal government was on their heels in the South. You have to do this. You have to do that. And you better do it right. But then they left. And my question to the federal government is, well, what did you expect was going to happen? You didn't hold people's feet to the fire. You did not hold these motherfuckers accountable on everything. And then you just let them run, just do whatever the fuck they wanted to do. And now that leads to Jim Crow and lynchings and all this. And now how many hundred and some odd years later, we still have people being killed because nobody is being held accountable. Nobody is going to jail. Nobody is going, you know, and when I say jail, where did you say that person, the bitch in OKC, and I'm in Oklahoma. But what is the bitch in Oklahoma? I mean, Tulsa going to get, if she's convicted, 4 months?
What Jug said in the chat room was 4 years max.
Oh, 4 years max. Now, you know, the Horn family...
And it won't be hard time.
No. Remember, you know, the Horn family, I shared with my own legal issues, with the criminal justice system. I was on probation for 10 years. Went to jail for what they say was the claim that I stole $6,000, which I did not do. 10 years, Bob. I did more time and on probation longer than the rapist up in Stanford. 10 years probation, and I was and I'm a convicted felon. Why? Because they criminalized me taking care of my child. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I turned in my paper and everything. They made the mistake, but because I trusted the criminal, because I was deluded into thinking you know, watching too many fucking TV shows that a public pretender, so it's going to be there for me, not realizing that, wait, they get their paychecks from the same goddamn people that pay the judge and the prosecution. What I did not stand a chance, and especially since I never had dealt with the criminal justice system. So, you know, so whenever somebody gets away with shit, I fucking lose it. I can't even fucking go to Canada. This happened damn near 20 years ago. I can't even fucking go into Canada because of this. It has haunted my life since 1999. And I swear to God, whenever I hear about some white bastard getting off with some bullshit, or not, or just even worse, the fucking, so you're going to criminalize me for, you know, $5,000, $6,000, but the banksters that put us under the, threw us under the bus and fucked our economy 12 ways to Sunday, nobody goes to jail? For real? Okay. But there's no such thing as racism, Jim, Bob.
Oh, well, there racism. There was, Tracy, but it's over. Meanwhile, if you want, I mean, this would be funny if it wasn't not. You want to know what the wingnuts are having a hissy about? It's not enough that they've got the video from Charlotte and of course they're outraged. So over in Wingnutistan, they're passing around a video of a homeless white man who is brazenly attacked by a group of other men.
Mm-hmm.
And the response to it from Wingnuts, oh my God, what, all caps, what lowlifes, that poor man, shame on us, this is sickening, what has happened to compassion for others, God help us. The left wing tries to kill God, and this is the result. Godless animals with no conscience or empathy roaming the streets. This is the outcome of diversity. This is our future unless we change. Real cool, Charlotte, fucking kick a homeless man down. Elderly homeless white man attacked by Charlotte rioters.
Rioters. Were they looting too?
It happened in London. Not London, Connecticut. Not London, Kentucky. Not London, West Virginia. London, England.
But London, England.
I mean, there's red double-decker buses in the scenes, and the dumbass white wingnuts can't even tell that it's not the new United States of America. It's Charlotte. It's Charlotte, I tell you. God help us. God damn, there. You know, it's the combination. It's like our buddy Burns Lawler sings. It's not the heat. It's the stupidity.
I just wish, when it comes to, you know, the criminal injustice, I wish they would sentence cops as harshly as they sentence the, you know.
Sentence? It'd be nice if they could get convicted once in a while.
Right.
Convicted? It'd be nice if they'd be tried. Tried? It'd be nice if they were charged.
I mean, because, you know, I'm looking at this, at what's happening with, you know, the indictments or the lack thereof, and like you said, if they even get them to trial. And what's the difference between that and what was happening in the South when an all-white jury would convict a brother for, you know, whatever, and that was it?
Yep.
Or even worse yet, he didn't even make it to trial. He would get just drug out to jail and lynched. So that's when people, you know, like, you know, the people who sit back and say, you know, all lives matter. Yes, all lives matter. But see, but the fact that black lives don't matter to the people who are supposed to protect us. It's like, I sent you, in the private message, the brother talking about, you know, his wins, you know, just, and I mean, I don't like the fact how he drops the N-word a lot, but it's that dropping of the N-word because of his anger and his frustration. And he reposted that video. He already posted it back in July. And he wrote on that, he's like, you know, I have to repost this because it happens again, happened again. You know, another black man is shot. It must be Wednesday.
Or some other day that ends in Y, Tracy.
Yeah. It has, you know, and like he says, he goes, you know, your justification for shooting people and killing people because you were scared is, why are you a cop? What kind of...
I mean, isn't there supposed to be a little courage? I know, courage. Well, look, the cowardly lion had to go had to go all the way to the wizard for some courage. I mean, don't impose too high a standard on poor Betty Shelby.
Look, a million years ago, I used to want to be a police officer. I actually took the test and I passed it. You know, I did very well at the test. But I didn't go forward because not long after that, I got pregnant with Alex. So I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to be a cop and a single mom too. That's not going to work because I know with the hours and the police academy and all that. So, but I know my temper. and the chances of me just killing somebody indiscriminately, that you wouldn't have to worry about that. It would be me. You would have to worry about me killing that, you know, a pedophile or, you know, somebody like that. Those people that you know did it, but because they got off with some loophole, I'm like, you know what? Besides the fact that, you know, being a single mom, I knew that I would be judge, jury, and executioner. I knew it. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, so I'm like, but now I can't even, I'm glad that I made that decision. Because, you know, at what point do the good cops stand up and say, this is some bullshit, this needs to end?
And that's the question no one can answer, Tracy.
No, that's what troubles me, Bob. It's like, when the fuck are people going to be held accountable? When the fuck are people going to say, when the chief of police or whatever says, you know what, we need to stop this, we need to do more training or whatever, and I'm so tired of that one bad apple. Somebody wrote on a Facebook page, it was a white woman. She's fucking so tired of this, you know, because she's like, I grew up on a farm, you know, and when there was one bad apple, we threw it out, or whatever the case may be, because it's going to spoil the rest. We threw it out.
Yeah, despite what the Jackson 5 sang, it will despoil, it will ruin the whole barrel.
It will ruin the whole barrel. So, bro, you know, don't give them any more paid vacation. See, because like you said, what's the incentive not to kill black people? You give them paid vacation. You know, well, we're going to, you know, while they're investigating, they're on paid leave. What happens when you are on suspension with no pay? And then you hear, well, you know, what about their paychecks? And what about, you know, their lights might be turned off and they might lose their homes? Well, you kill somebody's father. So at what point, what's going to happen with them when you can't, when they can't, because he's dead, he can't provide for his family? What about that? I wish we can have rules. I wish, you know, see, the problem with you and I, people like us, we're not in charge of anything because we got sense. We got common sense. And so we cannot, I think you and I and the rest of the Horns family, our brains explode. We have many brain explosions throughout the day because we just can't, and we can't believe what's happening in this country or in the world. You know, and it's like.
But you know what? If we don't believe it, we're maybe in worse trouble.
Yeah, because then we're in denial. I mean, but we can't believe is why nothing has been done. and makes it even worse is those people who keep telling
us. But Tracy, the history of this nation is that nothing ever does get done until such time as the pressure becomes unbearable. The civil rights struggle, the labor struggle, the Civil War. The Civil War was brewing for 67 years. Okay, 64 years. 2, 3. Can't add. Wait. Or subtract.
67 years.
Yeah. Four score and 5 years. That's 85 years.
Because the score is 20, right?
Yeah. This country does not solve problems until the problems become so awful that we absolutely have to make effort towards solving them. And historically speaking, the United States, the efforts that we've made are half-hearted. And whatever half-hearted effort is made, there is always the reactionary right wing who has a long memory and stays after it trying to destroy whatever progress is made. I mean, goddamn, the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act.
Right, because
declaring racism was over.
You know, forget about mandatory minimums, prison industrial complex, the poverty draft, separate but equal.
None of that will change until the pressures from it become intolerable. And they have to become intolerable in the meantime. They have to become intolerable not to the people who are forced generation after generation after generation to tolerate them, but until it becomes intolerable to the wealth class, the class that runs the government, the class that runs business and industry.
Yeah, when it's like that story I told this, years ago, when the guy, the customer that made a joke about lynching in my cab, and he tried to white-splain it, didn't mean to offend you, and then he wouldn't shut up. And I said, you know what, buddy? Because I knew he'd do it, the group of people here on business. I said, let me tell you something. I don't know who you think you are or what you think I am, but let me tell you a little something about me. I said, I know you don't care about me as a black person or black people in general, but I know you care about your pocketbook or your wallet. And I guarantee you, you are so lucky that I do not know who your name or who you or the company that you work for, because I promise you this. I would be on the phone to your freaking corporate office to recount how you thought making a joke about lynching was funny, but in a cab driven by a black woman. And I would be on your Twitter page, your Twitter feed. I would be on your Facebook page, all your company's Facebook page. I said, I don't have a lot of followers, but I have enough. And at that time, it's like right after I started listening to the horn. So I would have been on the next day on the phone with you and said this person's name and the company. I said, because see, I met, and the only time you guys care about shit is when it affects your bottom line. See, I know enough about, I don't know a lot about high finance and all that shit, but I do know enough that when enough people start talking about your company and, oh my God, he said what, and he did this, and this is the kind of company, who did this, what it is, when it starts affecting your bottom line, when you start getting that negative press, then you start getting nervous. And then people start losing jobs and shit. You shut up at that point.
Yeah. Hey, Tracy, I got a bunch of people trying to jump in.
I appreciate
the insight, and thanks for last night's challenge. I really do appreciate that too.
And I actually remember to deal without you calling me.
Quit that. All right, we'll talk soon, Tracy. Take care.
We'll talk. Take care. You too. Bye bye.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from Thousand Oaks this evening. And let's run over to the stress line in Texas.
Hey, Bob. This is Bob from Texas again.
Hey, Bob.
I'm calling because I used to be in a rock band. I was in rock band for a long time, and I had long hair here in Texas. And let me tell you, that didn't mix well with the police either. And I thought you might be interested in just a few tidbits that I personally experienced. The way that it was certainly nothing to the black experience. No one, I never saw anyone get physically, you know, well, kicked or anything like that, or certainly
murdered.
Shot. But they love to hassle people. And one of the ways they would do was play in a bar, bars that were, these are decent places. We're not talking about a scum, you know, heroin shooting bar. But the cops would come in with flashlights about every 20 minutes and want to see that the customers' driver's licenses. So you can well imagine how long it would take before people would say, let's get out of here.
Well, sure, and the next thing you know, business is gone.
There you go. I'll tell you another one,
isn't that same mob behavior I was talking about?
Sure it is, and later, we played this bar for years, later it stopped, so I figured they probably paid some protection money or something.
It wouldn't shock me in the least.
Here's another one they called violation of the liquor law. And I read in Rolling Stone after this happened to our band that it happened to bands all the time up in California. Here's what the deal is. Here in Texas, most of the cities, liquor has to not be served after 2 a.m. It's a violation of your liquor license if anyone is drinking after 2 a.m., okay? So in this particular instance, we were playing a bar that was as big as Billy Bob's. So the bar was like in another county, and we were on stage, you know, completely away from all of this. So the cops come in this one night and they say, come on, we're all going downtown. What happened? Violation of the liquor law. What? Yeah, someone was drinking alcohol after 2 a.m. So everyone is going downtown. So they pulled up paddy wagons. Everybody had to get, the women had their own paddy wagon. The men had theirs. Taken downtown, put in a holding cell, with no word whatsoever, nothing, until someone knew somebody, you know, that got a bail bondsman. We were totally ignorant of the whole exercise, that posted bond for us, okay? So then we're served with you have to appear before court, right? So it just so happened that my name was first on the list. So, you know, I don't know how you prove yourself innocent of not drinking alcohol after hours, but I was going to try. And the cop that arrested us sits down. The judge says, what happened? The cop says, I don't remember anything. Case dismissed. But you still owe your money to the bail bondsman for bailing you out of jail. So they've hassled you. You lost money. And the club, you see?
No, yeah.
Have you heard of that kind of thing before?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I have. Unfortunately, that is not a problem unique to Texas, Bob.
All right,
but
I'm just telling you things that I.
No. That doesn't discount the validity of what you describe, and as you note, if that's what you know, a long-haired hippie-looking white guy, and
right.
People going to you know going to a bar, and the crowd is that way too.
Right.
Then, you know, press it down, shake it together, double it up, fold it over, make it into four times, eight times, 10 times, the million times more, and you got an idea of what the black community goes through.
That's right.
But
that's right.
But only an idea.
Right. That's true. I just want to say that when I have told other people this in the past, they don't believe me. They think that the police are angels.
Oh, no. I mean... I can tell you, just right here in this little bit of nothing town that I live in, we used to have a beer joint. Okay, and it's not like people drove from 100 miles away to have a can of beer. They didn't even serve draft. Okay, and you know it's not like the greatest, you know, the great jam bands of the East Coast or the great country acts of the East Coast were playing there. It wasn't a draw.
Right.
It was just local small town beer joint.
Right.
That's what we call them here, beer joints. And, you know, you could shoot a game of pool, and there's a jukebox, and the 40-year-old Ms. Pac-Man machine. I mean, nothing. Just a place to sit down and drink a beer in hopefully in, you know, peace and quiet, maybe watch a football game.
Right.
And they tried to reopen after going down for a little while for some repairs and stuff. They tried to reopen a few years ago. And every night that they turned the lights on, the local police cruiser would come up and park across the street from their parking lot.
Right.
And so pretty quickly, the message was received in the community. Do not go there and try to have a beer.
Uh-huh.
Now, bear in mind that the people weren't getting robbed in the parking lot or stabbed or shot or kicked or even looked cross-eyed at. It's just that the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Baptists here, in conjunction with the Methodists and probably not the Episcopals, never the Episcopals, but they declared that they were not going to have a beer joint in their good, God-fearing little town. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, and this, you know, I've opined on this from time to time, when a little town can't support a beer joint, that little town is dead. Not because everybody has to be an alcoholic, but, you know, successful little towns like the ones I'm so fond of, like up in Wisconsin, every one of them has a little beer joint. And the priest goes there, and the banker goes there, and the farmer goes there, and the cop goes there.
Right.
Or at least that's the way it's supposed to work. But that doesn't happen here. You know, if you're gonna you're not supposed to drink, but if you do drink, you need to do it at home, and you need to not let anybody see you buying it, and you know, and preferably alone, because that's how your good Baptist, that's how your Baptists do it. I mean, you got Baptists down there, Bob. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. I got a couple of more tidbits, if you don't mind.
Oh, go right ahead. Absolutely.
This is years ago, but I was invited to a dinner party. It was the wife of a policeman that was throwing the dinner party. It was a small group of us. And after dinner, the husband cop thought he'd really entertain us by bringing out a shoebox full of driver's licenses. And he explained that on slow nights when it was boring, they would be in one car, and another group would be in another car, and they would cruise around looking for young people behind the wheel. They would stop them for no reason, take their license, take it back to the car, pretend to run their license, and then come back and give them a warning and not return the license to them. And that being young, being kids, many were intimidated to ask for their license back. That was the game. They didn't know what to do. So the game was, how many licenses can we get versus you? That was the game.
God, that's disgusting.
And he was proud of that. He was proud enough to pull the shoebox out and show it to everybody how neat that was. And then some kid has got to go through the hassle. Again, it's a hassle. I think that's what they do with whites mostly, is hassle. They don't kill. But you have to go back to the DMV and get you a new driver's license. You know, ha, 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 ha.
I don't know if you've seen him, but there's a he's brilliant. If I was a millionth as funny as this guy is, I'd consider myself a fortunate man. But there's a guy out there, calls himself the liberal redneck. His name's Trey Crowder. And he posted something a few weeks back, and he said, now what, and he's East Tennessee. And he said, now, wait a minute. Since when are us rednecks such all-fired big fans of the police?
He said, our favorite programs are programs about people who run from the police. he said, most every time we get in trouble, it's because we've done something stupid and the police ruin our fun. But all of a sudden, we're the ones running around talking about Blue Lives Matter? Oh, no, you need to look him up. Everybody needs to look him up. He is absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
And I feel guilty for even stealing that little bit from him, but my goodness gracious. Because he's got redneckery, I mean, nailed down to the ground with a nail gun.
That's funny. One last one, Bob.
All right.
This is not police misconduct. And I'd be curious to know if you have a similar thing or ever did in West Virginia. The year was 1969. We were hired to play a college fraternity party at a lake. Okay? 1969, they had to choose either drinking or dancing. You could not drink and dance in this area here in 1969, and cops were there. They chose drinking, by the way. The cops were there to make sure nobody danced. That's here in Texas.
Dear God, you got me whooped. I mean,
okay.
I've said before, I grew up in a town where we weren't allowed to have a senior prom or a junior prom. Because we had junior-senior banquets, Bob, because the entire community was run by the Churches of Christ, and they did not permit dancing, and our deeply authoritarian principal, who was not allowed to smoke in his own home, by the way, but would smoke cigarettes in his office and then throw kids out, suspend kids from school, caught smoking back behind the gymnasium. And I'm talking about cigarettes, not even the good stuff. But he forbade dancing, and during the entirety of his tenure, there was no dancing inside that high school. But they never had to call the cops to make sure nobody danced, because half the school was Church of Christ too, and they like Baptists, they understood where and when and how, and so later on they'd leave and go out to somebody's barn, and dance and drink, Bob. So, no, you got me. I'm beat.
All right. Anyway, I appreciate your program, Bob.
Oh, thank you so much, Bob. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Take care now. Bye. Our buddy Bob in Texas. Cops were there to make sure no one danced. In 1969, how could they tell? Then again, once upon a time, there were great little communities in Texas settled by Czechs and Germans that had wonderful breweries and beautiful dance halls, and a few of them still exist. Let's run over. Let me check in real quick. Thank you very kindly, Marcia, for jumping into the fundraising this evening. That means we've only got $150 to go for the evening's fundraising goal. Which is, one at 150, two, et cetera. But that's all it is. It's not 400 or 500. And what a relief. This is tough, but it comes from the heart. Steve writes and says, I'm there, Bob. I'm at the fuck the cops moment. They can all kiss my ass. I don't want their service, and I don't want their protection. Isn't it funny that the right wing has all these hissies about taxation for schools, school funding? Well, I want to just they got little scams going on in the different states. Dr. Bill was talking about it because people, well, I'm being taxed double because I'm sending my child to a good God fearing school, and I'm still expected to pay taxes for those heathen schools where they don't love Jesus. These poor, clueless dumbasses don't begin to understand that their precious little Christian lumpkin is not going to be able to solve all the problems of society, and that society generally is deemed to benefit by an educated populace. I mean, there just aren't enough wealthy people to provide all the genius that this country needs.
It's not just that this country needs people to do the stuff that the wealthy class don't want to do. There aren't enough smart rich people to do the smart things that we need done, and be the genius craftspeople, and the genius people who know what makes electricity dangerous or successful. And the line's pretty fine, but it is awfully damn deadly. But they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay taxes for public schools. And the same thing goes in the other direction. You never hear a right winger say that he's sick and tired of paying his taxes to support police that run around killing black people, do you? No, hell no. They're out there tweeting their little stupid brains out, hanging the hashtag about the Blue Lives Matter on the end of their tweets. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, and by the way, the story that's being promulgated all over the for-profit media, and I am going right back to the phones. Stories being promulgated all over for-profit media that the person who got shot in Charlotte last night and is clinging to life in a hospital there was not shot by the police, that it was civilian-on-civilian violence. And if they could get away with it, they'd say it was black-on-black violence. Turns out that may not be the case. Steve Knight, a minister of Mission Gathering Christian Church in Charlotte, was about 10 feet away from the protester who got gunned down last night. And Steve Knight says in no uncertain terms and tweeted it, he disagrees with the tweet from the city of Charlotte, who said that the shot did not originate from police. Then CNN and NPR and Fox News and NBC and all the others picked it up and ran with it. Well, the cops didn't shoot the guy. Well, here's the problem. Think Progress interviewed Steve Knight, and he said, I was in the crowd last night. I was very close to it when it happened. The strongest thing I can say is that it appeared to me the shot came from the direction of the police. The crowd certainly believed the shot came from the police, and that was my sense as well from where I was standing. I saw no one in the crowd last night who had a weapon. Knight went on to say that the incident happened after a line of police marched a group of peaceful protesters down Trade Street and into the entryway of an underground parking garage. Once there, he says, police began attacking the demonstrators. It felt like an ambush. As soon as we were drawn in there by police, tear gas was dropped, police began striking protesters, and that's when the shooting occurred. Oh, look! It was a police riot! He said, we want a ballistics report to know where the shot came from. Our concern is that there isn't going to be peace in Charlotte until people get answers to these questions. And again, just a gentle reminder, earlier today, Chief Putney said not a damned word about the investigation of why Keith Lamont Scott died. And he didn't die. He was killed. Back over to Skype, where I think Scott is waiting. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob, in the waning moments, let me share some memories of cops I have known and 2 years living in Tulsa. Would that work?
Yes.
Okay. When I was a kid, one of my uncles was a detective on the D.C. police force, but at the time I was too young to know anything more than that. A few years later, when I had an afternoon newspaper route, there was a cop on my route who was a customer who I delivered the newspaper to, who was a fine guy. A few years after that, strangely enough, also connected to newspapers, I was the Northern Virginia, at least Alexandria, Virginia, distributor, or one of them, of the Washington Free Press and the Quicksilver Times, which were both underground newspapers in the late 60s, early 70s in the D.C. area. There was a policeman who apparently, as near as we could figure it, was working undercover to infiltrate us radicals, or we radicals, who were peddling those filthy, commie, subversive newspaper-type rags. Okay, so there's him, Officer Stanley. And later, my younger brother became a Secret Service agent, which is tantamount to a souped-up federal cop. And I think mostly from what I know from his experience as a policeman, my brother's experience, there is a built-in bias, or if not bias, a built-in suspicion of everybody. You know, in the system of justice, we presume people innocent. In the system of police work,
they presume people guilty.
Exactly.
Everybody's guilty of something.
Exactly. And it's up to them to show that they are up to nothing bad and always something good.
I remember when cops I knew would joke, but it was with a wink and a nod that, well, hell, we wouldn't charge them if they weren't guilty.
Yeah, exactly. So there is a built-in suspicion of the other, and the other takes many, many forms. Back in the 60s and early 70s, it was the young, long-haired, hippie, radical other. It was the Black Panther other. In today's world, who the hell knows? But if you're black or at least dark-skinned, you qualify as being a member in bad standing of that nebulous group known as the other. Now, that's my experience, the sum total of my experience with cops, other than being pulled over for minor traffic stuff over the years a few times. Tulsa was an interesting experience. I lived there from like 94 until early 96. So that was some years ago. Hell, 20 years ago, now that I think of it, more than 20. And I don't have any vivid memories of any racial issues other than that nasty experience I once told you about of having a big envelope of propaganda from the white Aryan resistance group, who apparently had a branch in the suburbs of Tulsa, after I had written a pro-gun, or at least partially pro-gun, anti-gun, pro-gun law, two letters to two newspaper editors that got published. And that could have just as easily been a fucking Molotov cocktail or a bomb left on my front stoop. But the stuff that's going on now is just, it's disheartening. Because, and it goes back to something you said earlier, my notion of police is they're there to preserve and protect, what is that? What is written on the side of the
car? Protect
and to serve. But the way it's now interpreted is protect the interests of the people in blue and to serve the interests of property or property holders.
Corporations.
Yeah, and that is really skewed from what their actual mission statement ought to be, I think.
Well, it's certainly, I, whether they change it or not, I think the reality, Scott, is that that's what it is.
Now, what is the solution? What is the workaround? I know we only got 7 minutes before the top of the hour.
Well, I've said this before. I think, and it's not easy, but the first thing you have to do is you have to take the investigation of police away from police.
Yeah, well,
at
that
all.
Makes sense.
In other words, yeah. I don't want the state police investigating the city police. I don't want the county sheriffs in one county investigating the city police in another. Police,
because
no,
it's a good old boy kind of network.
And that implies a certain southernness, Scott, but it's nationwide.
Oh, I know.
There needs to be and because the FBI are police too. And all the other federalized police forces, it needs to be an entirely stand-alone department, answerable only to the president, and it needs to have a stand-alone team of prosecutors whose only job is to charge, try, and convict bad cops.
And it wouldn't be a bad idea.
Now you're still going to have to try them in front of in front of judges, but you can't. I mean, we can set up a separate secret court for people we want to spy on, but I don't think we could adding another no. But because
well, it wouldn't be a bad idea to add into that oversight mechanism a broadly based citizens council of some sort, because after all, the people that they're supposedly there to protect and to serve are the people who are footing the bill, who are financing the operation, and they ought to have some say in how that all is done.
Yeah, but that's another layer of potential corruption. And don't think for a minute that Officer Friendly won't lean on the local member of the Citizens Council.
Yeah, but see, Citizens Council takes us back to a very sad and dangerous time in America. I'm thinking of a council that is broadly based in terms of who makes up the council.
Oh, so you know, if this was something like the federal public defender system, it would be a corporation. People don't necessarily understand, Scott, that just because the word corporation is there, it's bad. I mean, you've got you know, the over there, you know, among the wackadoodles who listen to Alex Jones. My God, did you realize that your town is a corporation? You got those types, but you create a corporate body that has a board, that has that has an executive staff that's in charge of the hire and fire on the prosecutors and the investigators, and that's about as much layering as something like that can stand, because they have got to have absolute unimpeachable authority to act and autonomy, and the other thing they've got to have is the ability to impanel their own separate grand juries.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make good sense. And if it's not the ultimate cure, it would be a step in the right direction, because this shit has got to stop.
Well, because if it doesn't, things are going to get far, far worse. The only downside of that being what I said earlier, that this country only responds to problems when they become intolerable to the wealth and governance class. Sacramento 1968 is a perfect example. California loved them some open carry till Stokely and the guys showed up on the steps of the state house in Sacramento with their own guns.
Yeah, exactly.
Suddenly, we had gun control in California under Ronnie Reagan.
And the thing about waiting until it's intolerable is, by a multitude of a factor of thousands, it becomes more difficult and more expensive if you don't nip it in the bud when it first rears its ugly head.
Right. It's got a very close corollary, Scott, to the idea that John Kennedy expressed, that those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
Yeah.
And I don't favor violent revolution. I'm not, you know, I'm not some sort of burn baby burn Maoist. Okay? I'm a peacenik. But and I don't favor the death penalty. But one has to ask the question, what will make the police in this nation take this problem, their problem, seriously? And it's not because they don't have enough guns. It's not because they don't have enough cars. It's not because they don't have enough armored fucking troop carriers. It's not because they don't have enough snipers or tear gas canisters. It's because they are institutionally broken, because they live in paranoid terror of the citizenry they are supposed to protect. And like you said, they default to the idea of everybody's guilty of something.
Yeah.
Now, as a caveat, is this to say, no, not all cops, okay? I can walk up to one in my local community, nice guys. But it's a different story under different circumstances. Because the power is always there to be exercised, and they know that the structure will support them no matter how brutally. Morning. Sounds good. Later, Scott.
See ya.
Bye now. Didn't mean to filibobster the whole damn program away, but, well, sorry. So we'll get at it. We'll get after it again tomorrow. Friday on the front porch already? Yes, already. And we'll have a fundraising goal then of about $350. So thank you very, very kindly. Oh, my God, I buffered up. Son of a gun. Somebody's got to tell me these things. Anyway, thanks, everybody. Good night, y'all. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.